the real great adventures of me, Tom Terrific, with
Mighty Manfred the Wonder Dog.
Greatest hero ever. Terrific is the name for me, 'cause I'm so clever. I can be what I wanna be, and if you'd like to see, follow, follow me. If you see a plane on high, a diesel train go roaring by, a bumblebee or a tree, it's me. When there is trouble, I'm there on the double, from Atlantic to Pacific. They know I'm Terrific.
And this is for sure. I'll be here. This terrible Tom Metzger in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, where it's cold outside. It was about 9 above zero this morning, but it's supposed to get up to a tremendous 22 degrees above zero. And I was checking the temperatures around. I see in Southern California was 87 degrees. Come on, guys. UPS some of that stuff back here. Hey, it's, what is it? January the 18th, 2014, Saturn's Day. And let's see, we got either a full moon or a new moon. I think that's a full moon. Yeah, I think that's a full moon, man. But I always tell you, it's Friday, Saturday night, you got a full moon, be careful out there. Anything can happen. Even the cops can tell you that on the full moon, man. And we are at P.O. Box 401. That's our standby, and that's where you send your donations for everything. Yeah, radio show, donations for the inmates, all that kind of stuff. And then we take it from there. See, this morning I sent out two or three packets already this morning, and I got a letter in here from our good friend Loeb down there in Florida, George Loeb Jr., and I think he's probably the most ill-treated prisoner that we know of down there in Florida, so I'm going to read you his letter. He printed it here. I should be able to read it. It looks fairly plain. The last one he sent me, I just couldn't hardly make head or tail of it. Dear Brother Tom, this is perhaps the toughest year so far, at least since the first one. To be brief, the problem was and is isolation of sorts. The state, clearly acting on behalf of the federal government, has barred virtually all communications between activist citizens and me. There isn't even a pretense of legality. The rules and the laws say that they may not ban incoming mail based on the reputation of the sender, whether it be an individual or a group. The rule in the law states that they may ban mail only if the content and expression is a kind that might reasonably lead to violence. For example, last January they banned a Wildlife of Austria or Australia calendar because the man who sent it to me was an associate of a man who years ago was a leader in some white rights advocacy group in Australia. I'm telling you, boys, it's getting mean out there. Remember, please, that I am not making this up. Well, of course, you know, because they also banned all incoming mail from anyone named Metzger. I've been telling the people for years, and they would not listen. They would not believe us. Now this guy Snowden exposes the modern day version of it, and we feel justified to say, "I told you so." But when we began to tell them again about how and why things are trending as they are, we again find the people will not listen and do not believe us. Well, they're sheep, you know. They're just fat, dumb, and happy, like Max Kaiser says. They're fat, they're Walmart shoppers, and they're stupid. And so what can you expect? They've been dumbed down, but they've asked for it. You know, the system gave them a lot of goodies. You know, they got all those goodies, and so they willingly got dumbed down. Well, on with the letter. we again find that people will not listen. They do not believe us. I've got a test case right here, right now, well-educated but willfully ignorant as to root cause of decline of nations such as the United States. I force-feed him a little at a time, one college-level lecture per week, perhaps, and I still suspect that it will be of no avail. But I'm starting to gain a little traction with a relentless analogy. I use correction officers, just a minute here, as my example. Mr. Metzger, sir, I figure that right now you are thinking, that's crazy, there's no link, so you think, right? The guy says, that piece of garbage inmate that breaks into other inmates' lockers is dead wrong and should be dead, probably true. But I say, it's the fault of the staff. It's their job to keep that from occurring. We had a murder here, right here in my unit in August. A helpless, handicapped inmate was the victim, killed by his cell partner. The guy says the inmate murderer ought to get the death penalty. It was clearly premeditated. True and true. But I say, it's the fault of the staff. We are high security inmates. We should be in one man cells. I say it over and over. It's the fault of the staff. And now he sees it. The drug addicts, gang members, depraved and vicious individuals, and so on, don't run this prison. Anything that happens that is reasonably preventable is the fault of the staff. So I say busing and the decline of the educational standards was not caused by the Negroes. They don't run anything. It was the Jew lawyers, civil rights groups, and so forth. The Jews were behind all of it. Well, I think you got that pretty well figured out here. Let me get to another page here. We talk about Martin Luther King leading the so-called freedom marches. And I say, no, King didn't lead anything. King was led by a rabbi named Abraham Heschel. All of that agitation was the fault of the Jews. That reminds me of this radio program yesterday on Fresh Air, where the guy's written a book about the downfall of the Klan. And in the interview, he's saying, oh, it's how horrible these Klansmen were always talking about and being against the Jews. But he never, ever put out why. Why would they be against the civil rights movement? Why? Why? Well, because the Jews were leading the goddamn thing. I mean, you know, he knows it. The guy who wrote the book knows it. But he just wants to pretend it's not so, and he won't get his book published if he doesn't toe the line. Nelson Mandela, a leader? I say, no, he was led by the communists, and I note that Karl Marx was the son of a rabbi. I say, it was the Jews. Yeah, well, also Mandela, he was a communist in his younger days, and while he was in prison, he was one of their favorite guys to the Communist Party. But when he got out, he made a right turn and went right back to being with the capitalists. They don't care who you serve. Serve the communists, serve the capitalists, as long as you serve one of the two of them. So that's the analogy. Anything that goes wrong in the prison, I say it's the fault of the staff. Anything with the economy, absence of justice, reverse discrimination, immorality, war, domestic spying, torture, it's all the fault of the Jews. We must remember, then, that only relentless repetition can win the war, as Ben Klassen said long ago. Rush won't do it. It's up to us. Really, I've been reading the New American Magazine, the monthly publication of the John Birch Society. It's interesting that the John Birch Society stuff slides right in there. Nothing new there. Unchanged, the Birchers remain dogmatic Republicans, by and for the very rich, even if a significant segment of the very rich are exploited, manipulative, racist Jews. This month, in an article that is sadly typical of the Birchers, are one on a mission to prove that Mandela was a commie. Well, he was, but once he got out of prison and got into office, he was a flaming capitalist. That's Tommy speaking. implying that they, Birchers, are anti-communist. But how can anyone claim to be anti-communist and be pro-Jewish? Now, that's pretty hard. Clearly, the communist movement in the USA has been and is disproportionately Jewish. From funding and leadership to rank and file. Why do they think that John McClarity? Just a second, boys and girls, hold your pants on. I'm not quite sure that's... Oh, Joe McCarthy. Why do you think Joe McCarthy was ruined in a backlash of vilification? Who was powerful enough to do that? The communists? No, the Jews. It's the fault of the Jews. Well, I'll tell you the key to that, and a lot of people don't know that are in this struggle, that he had a lot of support all over the place. But he made the mistake of wanting to subpoena Corporal Schein, that was stationed at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, where I had been stationed in 56 and 7. Anyhow, Schein was the somehow the transfer point for the communists and the Jews, was Schein. And I don't know everything about that. I'll have to dig out some of my old notes on that. But he stepped on the wrong toe, and it was a Jew, and that's where, when they turned around and went for his ass. Well, since the wall fell down and Russia, Soviet Union is no more, all this stuff came out. They had spies all over our government. Harry Hopkins sure was one. They'll say, oh, no, he wasn't. Well, he didn't carry a card. He's like a lone wolf. He didn't carry a card. He was smart, but he was a communist. He thought that the Soviet system was the greatest thing since apple pie. And all those guys back then, Washington was riddled with fellow travelers, you know. So also this month, the Birchers run a pro-immigration piece citing Irish, Italian, and especially Jewish immigrants as having made powerful, positive contributions to American society. Well, what's that got to do with illegal mestizos defying the law coming into the country? As far as I know, that even most of the Jews, Italians, Irish, and so forth, the Germans, came in legally. Anyhow, he says that's very pro-Jewish. Crazy, really. Because immigration is a current hot-button topic where the Republican Party is facing a near-fatal dive. The article ignores and, in fact, conceals the current reality. See, the Italians and the Irish were legal immigrants, and the Jews, who are rightfully despised everywhere, were refugees. That's right, they were refugees. Today's immigrants have violated the laws of this country by coming here, and they are not legitimate refugees. They are illegal immigrants and should be all be deported dispassionately, zealously, and without any brutality, unneeded brutality. Many Republicans agree, but some profiteers, big business Republicans, the predatory capitalists, even Jews want the illegals to stay, because they immigrant and will often do work at below prevailing wage. Of course, they've always been for cheap wages. I've got a great idea. Make it very serious felony to employ or provide housing to any illegal alien, where the chief operating officer is answerable to such charges for failure to train his supervisor to prevent such hiring or housing, and making such persons eligible for bail, having presumable ties to persons in nations that might harbor them should they abscond. Boy, this is a long one. I think I'm going to stop here because I'll definitely read it, and I'll be getting an answer into the mail shortly to George, because it sounds like he's feeling better. He's starting to get back in the groove. He was sort of in limbo, I think, there. I don't think the COTC people are writing him at all. if you know COTC people out there and they're not writing and supporting George Loeb Jr., what the hell good are they if they won't pick up their wounded? Now, some of that mail may not be getting through. I got to, like I said before, we came up with that idea to use postcards. And what I've been doing is I type it out on a computer, print it out, and then I cut that piece of paper out and paste it to a postcard, a U.S. postal card. Now, those only cost about, I think they're about 37 cents. So when you go to the post office, pick up a dozen of them. And every morning while you're having coffee or tea or your whiskey or whatever, write a little note to an inmate, you know. Just a little note, how you doing, this grind, the weather's fine, all that kind of stuff. And or whatever you want to say, as long as you're not advocating that they break out of prison. And they get the message. They love it, you know. So I just sent a postcard to Greg Cobb and Dutton this morning, too. So I can write a card about every other day when I have something I want them to know. Now I'm in the process. And I just wonder sometimes, is anybody doing anything? I mean, is it just the sound of one hand clapping? I mean, I don't need to know what everybody's doing, but sometimes I just get the feeling like maybe I'm all alone here, the lonely Linwood Ford dealers. They used to have a guy in L.A. He was way out in Linwood, outside L.A., and he called him the lonely Linwood Ford dealer. Sometimes I feel like the lonely Warsaw agitator. So anyhow, I think that if people would get these postcards, it's very simple, just scrawl a couple of sentences on them, send them off. And that's a two-edged sword because their keepers have to read them. I mean, they don't necessarily have to read them, but they probably do. And so when you send something into the prison where your message is right out in the open, the guards read it. Other prisoners who are working in the mailroom read it, so forth and so on. So you're not only reaching the prisoner, the inmate, you're reaching other people that could have an effect on them. Because we've had prison guards that have been involved in our activity for years. I'm not the greatest fan of prison guarding because I just can't see myself being a prison guard. But still, it's a way of making a living. And sometimes these people that have been our people have done all they could to give guys breaks, white guys, especially racially conscious white guys, in the prison. So it doesn't hurt to work on these prison guards, too. So anyhow, like George Loeb is doing, and he's doing something there very effectively. Now here's a guy that's down there in this god-awful prison, and I think it's Indian Town, or I forget, what is it on here? I forget. Well, I don't have the envelope here, but well, anyhow, he's down in that god awful place in Florida, and you got the biggest criminal, one of the biggest criminals in the country, is the governor of Florida. He's an absolute unindicted felon. I mean, he bought a string of hospitals, then he bled them white, totally robbed the system, and then he dumped them and took off. I mean, this guy, I mean, and they got all these blacks and whites in prison for stealing a loaf of bread or stealing a car or something. Here, this guy, hundreds of millions, this son of a bitch, illegally took out of the Florida economy. And then he runs for governor and all these fucking Republicans vote for him. I mean, Jesus. The insanity of it all. The insanity of it all. Like I told you before, guys like Loeb down there in the prisons there in the South. The South are the worst because there's more Christian influence on those prisons. Oh, no. Yes, there is. You bet your ass. You show me the Southern prisons, and I'll show you Old Testament shit. Jewish Old Testament applications of the law to torture them, waterboard them if it can. anything to make them miserable. That's your Republican, Christian bullshit, you know? And he has to buy his own shoes. If he don't have money to buy his own shoes, they have to go barefooted. That's in the United States, in a so-called civilized Western part of the world. Shit. You get treated much better in other countries around the world than you do here. And they wonder why when guys get out, a lot of them go berserk and kill half a dozen people as soon as they get out of prison. They've got so much pent-up hatred that they're not being redone or anything. They're not being ready to come back into the so-called big concentration camp, out of the little concentration camp. And in fact, they're made worse in prison. You're in prison, you begin to hate far more than you hated before you went in. Half the people are in there, burn out, and just become drunks and everything else, and drug addicts when they come out. The other half want revenge. Revenge, man.
I think he's in real trouble. He needs your help.
That is a genetic mutation which causes diminished levels of neurotransmitters in the brain, thereby resulting in impulsive and aggressive behavior, criminal behavior.
So you convinced, you successfully mapped and isolated the culprit gene.
A heritable gene. Heritable. DRD4.
Then why is it that the age-old nature versus nurture debate continues to rage?
Because the nurture proponents insist that an individual's environment is the dominant force shaping his behavior, and I couldn't disagree more. I fear, however, that society is not quite ready for such a leap. Imagine, for instance, what it would do to the criminal justice system, which predicates its entire existence on a principle of individual responsibility. Would the criminal legally...
Well, I got most of that. It was an interesting clip off a film I watched last evening about a professor who was experimenting with gene therapy and so forth, and rediscovering the connection between genes and offspring and how it affects offspring. And what he's making clear there is that... As long as the system boils it down and only makes a judgment on a person because of nurture and ignores nature, it's really a lopsided deal. We do inherit genes and we do inherit characteristics. And you can see how that would work out with people who get into the trouble with the law. That in the court, they will never take that as a possible influence on the person. That if there was a lot of alcoholism in the family, and it's entirely likely that the person inherits it or inherits some other undesirable trait. And that goes back to when we used to, as a race, always look people over real carefully before we let them into the family, you know. You didn't just let your kids date anybody and start taking them out and all that kind of stuff. You looked them over real good, and then the one first thing you wanted to know was who is their family. Of course, when you lived in agricultural, rural areas and people didn't travel so far, it was quite easy to know that some families had a real bad name because many people in that family had done some bad things. They don't do that anymore. They don't even medically test people before marriage. I remember when if you went to get a marriage license, you had to get a medical test to see whether you had some disease or not. But now they don't do anything like that. I mean, somebody could come in here from Bangkok, Thailand, get off the plane, grab a woman, and get married, and away you go. No matter what diseases that they may be carrying. I've told you before, I try to get recorded clips as I go through the day off the radio, off TV, off, out of a movie or whatever. And sometimes they come up fast and you don't expect them. Luckily, with most television today, you can stop it, rewind it a little, come back and record it. But you're still going to have problems doing that. But that's where I try to get a lot of these clips, because there's some very good files laying around. You know, we've got a lot of people in a struggle that are fanatics. And when I say fanatic, it's someone who wants to believe everything bad about people you don't agree with, and want to believe everything good about the people you do agree with, or don't believe anything good about you if they hear it from a fellow rumor monger. You know, to have credibility with people, not necessarily in the struggle, but in the public at large, you should be fair and not let your determination to fight for the white race turn you into somebody who believe anything. I get a lot of this about this Kevin Strong. I used to get it about Joe Fields out in California. I might as well, I gave up on that. The only thing I did was went down to the court and picked up the files and saw that he'd been charged with, what, 9 counts of child molestation. And he pled guilty to 5 of them, which put a blot on his life for the rest of his life. And that was the story. And, I mean, he pulled a car in front of a school, and all these girls came up to the school, and he was trying to get them all to go with him and take pictures and all that kind of stuff, and his whole car was full of lewd magazines and porno. I still get people who say, you're not fair, you shouldn't have said that. He's a good white soldier. Well, no, he's not a good white soldier. If a Jew or a nigger does that, you go ape, you know. People go ape. And same way with Kevin Strom. Now, I met Kevin Strom years and years and years back in the 70s when we were in Washington, D.C. supporting Rhodesia. That shows how far back that goes. And I didn't follow this case of molestation or pornography or whatever, but I saw enough of it to know that where there's smoke, there's fire. And so I probably shouldn't have said it, but this one guy who's a total fanatic, anything the Germans did in World War II is fine, everybody else was an asshole, you know, those kind of guys. And he was going on how great Kevin Strom's on the radio, putting radio shows on. And I'm sure he's very good. I've heard him before. Yeah, right. But I just offhandedly, because I like to bug this guy, I said, but don't let him babysit your baby, your kids. And he came back and still, you know, that he was all set up. The Jews set him up. Well, most of our people that are in prison weren't set up. They walked into something, and they took the bait, and they got it. And I feel sorry that they're in there, and I will support them. But they did something, you know. Anyhow, so he comes back with, I believe he was set up by his nasty wife. Well, okay. So what if he had a nasty wife? I heard he had a nasty wife too, but how nasty? And who was arrested several times recently? Well, he don't say what she was arrested for. She is a spiteful nutcase. Well, the question, though, is did he do it? He says someone planted 10 pictures on his computer, which proves nothing. Wait a minute. He's got 10 criminal photos on his computer and he don't know about it? Come on. And then he says a Fed setup for sure. Well, it was the same thing with Edgar Steele. Now, I didn't particularly personally care for Edgar Steele because he was a very arrogant person, but I wasn't. But that's not for me to judge as far as his writing a good book about race and all that kind of stuff. But and I didn't go into court and look at all the files, but when a guy takes a car to the garage and the mechanic finds a bomb under it, it's pretty bad, man. It looks pretty bad. So, but we have people in the struggle who will say every time, oh, no, it's always a setup. And even if it wasn't a setup, we should go to the wall for the guy. Well, I'm not going to go for the wall to the wall for a guy if he's actually involved in child pornography, or if he put a bomb under his wife's car or something like that. That's not even has nothing to do with the racial struggle at all. Believe me, I give guys more of a break than maybe anybody, but I want some evidence. If you're going to go around saying, oh, the devil made me do it, well, that's a problem. So, like I said, just don't let him babysit your babies. I don't know. Is the value of a person as a propagandist as important as being a moral, decent person in his personal life? I've known a lot of people in this struggle who were total rats morally, but they wrote some pretty good stuff and said some pretty good things. How should we make a judgment on stuff like that? I'm not a goody two shoes, but I believe in justice. And as far as I'm concerned, if a man has done a dastardly thing that has nothing really to do with race at all, then I personally don't want anything to do with him. I don't give a goddamn if he writes the whole Christian Bible or, you know, the Declaration of Independence. If Thomas Jefferson was fucking a nigger, his slave. Now, I can read his stuff and say, this is good, this is bad, and you're a chicken shit hiding out at Monticello while Washington and the boys were freezing their ass off at Valley Forge, and Washington once said, where's Jefferson? Well, Jefferson was down at his Monticello fucking the nigger, to put it straight to you. So how much do we really feel that Jefferson was a great man? That's a question you have to answer yourself. How far are you going to go and looking the other way? And remember, there's a lot of the public out there are seriously watching you and not necessarily hating you. But when they see you come up with something that is not kosher, as you might say, and totally immoral, how do you think that affects the struggle by and large? Because from now on in, it don't make any difference what Kevin Strong writes or how many radio programs he makes. The public at large are going to be hit with this. Well, he was a child molester, a child pornographer, whatever they call him. Same with Joe Fields. I don't know. He's probably still running around with Willis Cardo, which looked the other way about the whole thing. But do you think that's a good representative? The same way with David Duke. I mean, the things that he's been involved in, some really bad shit, you know. Do we really want somebody out there on the front lines with that baggage? I don't. That's why I like Lone Wolf. I don't have to accept anybody except myself. I may like you, but I'm responsible for me. And you got to be responsible for you. And that's the way it works. Now, I can see a John Dillinger type. I can see the Order where they were robbing money to support the racial struggle, all that. I can surely look the other way about things like that. But these moral crimes, no, I can't handle that. But don't expect me to come on here every day and talk about Joe Fields or David Duke or Kevin Alfred Strom. He's going to do what he's going to do, and people want to follow him, follow that. Well, that's their individual choice, and I don't have time to talk about it much. You heard it right now, and that's it. Same thing goes for the Hitler worshipers. You know, all leaders have feet of clay. All leaders that ever lived involved themselves in illegal, immoral acts while they were in power. None of them escaped that. And so when I say what I say, I'm saying about all world leaders. Hitler made a lot of mistakes, and Hitler did a lot of very bad things. But there's people out there who make Hitler a god. They worship him. I guess they didn't have a father at home or something like that, and Hitler has replaced the father who was never there. But at the same time, when a leader does something that was very good, we should talk about it. But don't deny the fact that great and powerful leaders do bad things, because they all do. Here's another example of so-called racial soldiers that do something that's just the opposite of doing something good for the race. Now, this is down in Australia. A Vietnamese man awaiting medical treatment after being bashed by Melbourne neo-Nazis is in limbo after being banned from Australia for 3 years. Well, I'm not talking about him being banned. I'm talking about him being, in 2012, Ming Dong was punched and kicked by two men 70 times, stabbed, and had a brick smashed over his head with such force that the brick broke in two. His front teeth were smashed out in a racial attack, and he was still awaiting $25,000 worth of dental treatment. Now, the white taxpayers down there are paying for that, too. Thank you, Mr. Skinhead or whatever. Last week, Mr. Dong was forced to leave the country after immigration officials. That's fine. He should be kicked out and kept out. But my point is that the so-called white rights people, whatever they are, that do these kind of things, this stuff goes around, goes viral, goes around the world over and over and over again. So when they get a chance to get a hold of you, they're going to bury you. Whoop, I better get my mic over here. I didn't have my mic in front of me. But I don't know. So many of the young guys that got into it after I pretty well moved out of that particular area of the skinheads appear to be, in many cases, more just flat-out criminals, drug dealing and this kind of beatings and stuff like that. You don't have to have any belief to do this kind of stuff. But anybody that gets involved with this kind of, you know, like 7 or 10 on 1 and knifing somebody or beating them 70 times, that's cowardly, whether it's a non-white or not. And guys will send me this stuff. A guy just sent to me this stuff, the same guy that was talking about Kevin Strom, saying, joking about it, how wonderful this was. There's two kinds of white racial soldiers in this country, as far as I'm concerned. They're mine, the honorable type, the loyal type, the people who try to operate morally in the streets and at home. And then there's the kind that just become drug-soaked, liquor-soaked, looking for a fight everywhere they go, and usually they go home and beat up their wife or something, and maybe their kids, to the point where the one Nazi out there in California, the kid, we don't know exactly what drove that kid to do that, but he killed his own dad. I think there'd have to be quite a bit to that story that kid finally uncorked and went after his dad. Anyhow, that's what I'm thinking, and if I lose everybody, well, that's too bad. That's the way I'm going to be. That's the way I think. Now, in the Portland case, where I was supposed to be involved with the beating of this Ethiopian to death, which I had nothing to do, of course, with it, didn't advocate it, anything, they said that I got a call from Rick Cooper, which I did, because the word I got was these people were drug pushers and wife beaters. And they teamed up with white women up there in Portland and were not only in the drug business, but beating their wives, and a couple of them had records from beating the wives. And I said to him, to Rick Cooper, who's now passed away, I said, it couldn't happen to a better bunch of guys. And I meant it. People who operate like that and beat their wives and do bad things like that, I have no use for them. Well, in court, they turned it around like it was just three black guys innocently walking down the street. They got attacked. One guy died. And Metzger said, couldn't happen to a better guy. You know, it's how they twist everything around, you know. And the press never brought out the vices of those blacks in Portland, Oregon, which they never do. It's simply the white guy's always wrong, no matter what. That's why I don't hate from the bottom up. I hate from the top down. I hate the people who control the press. I hate the ruling class. I hate the banker class. I hate all of them, the Jews and anybody else that's into that business. So if I'm going to feel like doing something nasty, I'm not going to start at the bottom with some poor guy walking down the street unless he attacks me. And then it's all bets are off. But when we've got people that are causing hundreds of thousands of people to be murdered around the world running our government, we've got congressmen who are allocating billions of dollars for more weapons to kill people with, when we've got congressmen and senators up there now who have said on record that we ought to kill that Snowden guy and Assange. It's on the news. They said, well, how are we going to do it? We should shoot him, kill him. These are the people I want off the street. Are you kidding? At the top, not at the bottom. The bottom are mostly victim, no matter what race you're from. But these people at the top are homicidal maniac killers, warmongers, sons of bitches. There should be prices on all their heads. And they should be afraid to come back to their home districts when they vote like they do. Vote for war, vote for killing, vote for more weaponry, vote for more atomic bombs, the whole bit, and back up governments like Israel that do the bad things that they have done. These guys should be afraid to go back to their home districts on vacation. They should be terrified. They should have to stay in Washington with all the other maggots. Now, the day that these people, these homicidal maniac war criminals in the system, start being afraid to walk around on the street, be afraid to drive to work, be afraid to go home, that's the day that I know we're starting to win. And you know, the more radical left feel exactly the way I do about these people at the top. I could tune over there to Malloy all the time saying, it's time. The American people, it's getting time. But until they rise up, and he's talking pretty rough stuff over there. I mean, you know, tick, 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 tick. They're still hammering Gottfried Kussel over there in Austria. What a screwed up deal. There should be revolution already in Europe. I mean, when you can't have a website or anything that promotes the white race, or you can't have anything that promotes the National Socialism or questioning the Jews about their Holocaust and all that, when you can't have that, it's time to take off the velvet gloves and start swinging. He just appeared in court. Originally, they gave him about 10 years, and he still, I think, got 5 years or something. But anyhow, it's just an example of how you must hate the system. I mean, with absolute perfect hatred. And don't have any sympathy if these politicians over there start getting knocked off by the Al-Qaeda. Don't even lift a finger. Yeah. Well, that brings me around to that great book, Siege, and we're going to give you another little blurb here towards the end of the show from James Mason, that even though it was printed back in the 80s, early 80s, late 70s, but compiled from information from before that, strike hard, strike deep. I'm compelled at this time to add my voice to those few who have demanded that such things as Phase 1 type activities must stop. That's parades and all the uniforms and flag waving. Simply such nonsense as trying to make headlines, confront the enemy, or rally the masses won't work. Never has worked. Almost always results in merely revealing your weaknesses and making us look like idiots. The very strategy itself calls for numbers, which we do not have at this time. My view is that just because the Jews and the liberals have succeeded in making goyim out of the vast majority of whites, we need not sacrifice ourselves in a vain attempt at proving them wrong. We have got to trash can 1933 strategy and tactics. They won't work. For a decent street demonstration, you must have anywhere from 50 to 100 uniformed and disciplined troopers. James, it'd take a hell of a lot more than that to get their attention. In fact, that won't even get their attention unless they want to make it sound like you got their attention. We have managed 50 on several occasions and 100 on only one occasion. For the rest, it is pitiful and ineffectual. Futile, counterproductive, and I might add costly and dangerous. As much as I hate to see good comrades wounded in such useless actions, I hate worse to see the sacrifice of millions of lives in World War II that went into building the terrific reputation that we have enjoyed and are now wasting as these Laurel and Hardy stunts gradually destroy our image. Sound like anybody you know? We don't have to set ourselves up for big letdowns. The enemy does it for us. I will admit right here that it does require guts to stage these demonstrations. The tragedy that we can no longer tolerate is that those guts are wasted in this manner. Doing it in a way it's been done in the past gives the enemy full advantage of his power and places us at the mercy of our own weaknesses. It's got to stop now. Well, you see, that was back in 80, and it hasn't stopped. The Klan and the Nazis, some of them, are still marching around like goofballs. First, never ever announce your plans in any manner whatsoever. Second, forget about the use of uniforms unless and until you have a standing army of your own numbering 50 as a flat minimum. Well, I wouldn't do it anyhow. That 50... doesn't impress anybody. Glenn Miller had 100 or maybe 200 of them marching in uniform. Did that go anywhere? No, it didn't go anywhere. It looked nice. We all got excited about it, but it didn't go anyplace. As Joe Tomasi said, forget such activities as might be used in a campaign to gain political power. Rather, go instead to activities designed and intended to hurt the enemy. And for these activities, in my own opinion, two participants are one too many. Also, in my humble opinion, it is ridiculous risk and waste to mess with the material body of the enemy, as he has all our tax money to mend himself, just as a lizard will grow a new limb. The physical body of the enemy, however, is so utterly flabby that he positively can't stand very much of an intensified assault of this kind. In short, it would seem to me that any intelligence at all would lead comrades to know to stop hitting the enemy where he laughs and start hitting him where he screams. Strike hard and strike deep to build the climate of the revolution. where even the most craven of white cowards will be compelled to join or else die. But for God's sake, stop wasting yourselves and your efforts and making the rest of us look like damn idiots. Yeah, I like that. Now, we've had quite a number of leaders have been saying this for a long time, but in most cases, the other side of the struggle, the so-called right wing, has poo-pooed and tried to poo-poo it all along, which makes them very suspicious as far as I'm concerned. Robert Miles knew the score and preached it. I know the score and I preached it. Colonel Gale preached it. There were several people around the country that preached it. But the bulk of the leadership of the right wing did not want that to be the system because there was no real money to be made off of it. They wanted to have rallies and sell T-shirts and sell skinhead music and all that kind of stuff instead of concentrating on the struggle. Yeah, it's too bad. But anyhow, that's the way it is. But we'll get beyond it. No, don't worry about it. I told you, the Alamo. Remember the Alamo when Davy Crockett and the boys were sitting around there at night around the campfire, and Davy Crockett was saying all these bad things about General Santana, and finally the one guy jumped up and he said, "Davy, let's ride out to get him." And Davy says, "Relax, boys. He's force marching from Mexico City with 7,000 troops. He'll be here in good time." So just calm down, bide your time, keep your hatred underneath, and be ready to go, because this system is eating itself by the day. It's eating its own tail by the day. Don't interfere. Encourage it. Let them. They'll become far more dangerous, but they'll also end up losing. The one thing I wish would happen immediately is for China not to loan one more thin dime to this war criminal group in Washington. Not one dime. The only reason they're doing it now is because we've set them up with all this manufacturing over there, and they're making lots of money, and the Communist Party in China is just as decadent as the corporate predator capitalist, you know? That's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back with you on Moonsday. Yeah, Moonsday. 14:05, and think about what I've said. You need to think about it. Do not stick your head in the lion's mouth. The lion will chomp your head off. Once he's got you, there's not much we can do to help you. We'll do everything we can, but we can't do much. 14:05.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Bunker
knows.